It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, Boomer and Geo coming to you live from the Built Ford Tough studio on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. Talked on Friday about what the Jets and Giants did in the first round. I know that Giants fans are really excited about Cam Scadabaugh, and I think that they should be. I mean, this guy is everything you want in a football player, so we'll see if he gets an opportunity early on this year and becomes even more of a fan favorite. He's already a fan favorite. He hasn't played a game in a Giants uniform yet. I think that was one of the more enticing and likable picks that were made by Jets and Giants over the weekend. But the Shedeur Sanders story grew and grew and grew. Finally gets selected by the Cleveland Browns, number 144 overall in the fifth round. And when we saw him drop, it wasn't surprising, I guess, that he got out of the first round, but I can't sit here and tell you that it wasn't surprising to me that he went all the way in the fifth. I thought the second round would be where he would go, and what a statement from the league and the general managers and the owners that, one, they didn't think he was very good on the field, and two, they didn't like the way he was carrying himself to the point that he didn't even go in the first 2 days of the draft, the prank call on top of it. I mean, this was as brutal as it got for Shedeur and his family on the biggest stage of all.
Yeah, I mean, you and I were not surprised that he was falling because we knew about him falling a couple weeks earlier, and we were talking about Tyler Shuck, if you remember, and how he was rising up the board.
Yeah.
Now, Tyler Shuck basically was the second quarterback drafted. Third quarterback drafted after Jackson Dart and Cam Ward. But, you know, I Shedeur Sanders just torpedoed himself. His attitude off the field, all those bad meetings that he had at the combine, his dad didn't help him either. You know, he was on podcast talking about, this is my son. If I can get him to where I want to get him to, I'm going to do that. You know, and trying to, in somehow, way, shape, or form, comparing it to the Manning family, by the way, which is insane. But, you know, when you listen to this kid talk right prior or at the combine about, if you want a new culture in your locker room, I'm the guy to do that. I can turn it around. I mean, he's very high on himself. And I think he was very off-putting to many, many coaches and general managers in the league. And I'm telling you right now, and I know this after talking to three different personnel people in the NFL this weekend, they didn't even have him on his board, on their board. They took him off. And they took him off because the owner said, take him off. I don't want that guy. I don't want this kind of person entitled person on our team. And I don't blame him. I mean, when you listen to the way that he was talking about himself, some of the actions that you have seen on the field in terms of his interaction with other players, shoving a referee in the back, you know, building his own draft room, legendary, having all this crap hanging off. I mean, like, this is a basically wake-up call to, I think, a lot of these athletes. And by the way, he wasn't the only one who fell. The other one who fell was Quinn Ewers from Texas.
Yeah.
Another big nil athlete, played at a big school, played in, you know, playoff games, and was thought to be like the second coming. And, you know, he fell as well and fell really hard. So it wasn't just Shedeur that fell. Quinn Ewers fell right along with him.
Yeah, and there's no doubt that some of the things that you mentioned as far as the meetings, and there was a detailed Giants meeting where, I guess, you know, Brian Daboll didn't believe that he was prepared for it and then called him out on it. Then Shador's response back to Brian Daboll wasn't great. And then Daboll at that point, according to the report, was really down on him from that point on. There's no doubt that played a part in it. But we have seen so many guys that have had things hanging around them, whether it's a bad attitude or whether they got themselves in trouble somewhere along the line or whatever it may be. And if an NFL team believes that that guy can play, they still draft him high. I mean, he might drop a little bit in the draft, down to maybe the back end of the first round or second round, whatever it may be. But it won't be the fifth round. So I think that something's getting lost in this when everybody's, you know, you got Stephen A. Smith screaming racism, which is insane to me for many reasons. It's almost like I don't even want to address that part of it. But if there's just a lot of general managers out there, coaches and owners
that don't think he's very good on the field.
Yeah, I didn't think so either way back when in the beginning of all this. I didn't think either he or Cam Ward were worthy of the number one pick. But the point being is that if a team really desperately needs a quarterback and they're going to get forced into taking some of these kids, which has happened so many different times. I mean, could he have gone to a better place than the Cleveland Browns with the disasters that they've had at quarterbacks in their history?
I mean, it's funny. The Deion and Shador went from potentially forcing their way out of Cleveland in their minds at the top of this draft to being thrilled that the Cleveland Browns took him in the fifth round.
But here's the other thing. You know the guy I feel bad for? I feel bad for Dylan Gabriel. They drafted him ahead of Shador Sanders. And maybe this is the plan that Cleveland had all along. We're going to draft two quarterbacks, and we're going to try to create the ultimate competition to try to get the best out of Shador Sanders. Maybe they do believe that Shador Sanders was worth a higher pick, but now they're going to take him here and put him in a really highly competitive situation to see whether or not he's going to be able to, you know, fight through this and become the player that he thinks he is. But remember, you know, his dad is basically coached him in high school, coached him at Jackson State, coached him at Colorado, and now he's got to go out and be a man on his own. And, yeah, you know, this is going to be a test. This is going to be a real test for him. And hopefully he does have a chip on the shoulder. But you think that quarterback room is all going to be solidly pulling for each other and trying to win? I mean, Joe Flacco's in there. You got Kenny Pickett in there. If they all stay there, I don't know what Cleveland's going to do. And now you have Dylan Gabriel, Shador Sanders. And by the way, Deshaun Watson's still on the roster. I mean, he's not going to play this year because of injury. But, I mean, just think about a dysfunctional franchise and how bad that they have managed the quarterback position over the years. And they had their guy. His name was Baker Mayfield.
Yeah.
And they wanted to get rid of Baker Mayfield because of why? Because he was too selfish. He was too self-promoting. He was in too many commercials. What did they just draft?
Well, yes. And it's a little bit different, I think, when you're the number one overall pick and then you end up being a fifth round pick. But that Baker thing was a huge mistake. We know that. You look back on it, just asinine. The other part about that whole Baker Mayfield deal was he was hurt. That last year in Cleveland, his numbers were down because he played through injury.
And then on top of that, they replaced him with Deshaun Watson.
Yeah.
I mean, that just goes to show you how dysfunctional this franchise is. And I love Kevin Stefanski. I think he's a really good coach. I don't know if he made this pick. I don't know if Jimmy Haslam made this pick. I don't know Andrew Berry made this pick. I'm not sure, but
It looked like Andrew Berry did based on that video.
It looked like it was a consensus pick to me. But, I mean, just think of that quarterback room now. There can't be one guy pulling for the other guy in that room.
Kenny Pickett, Joe Flacco, Dylan Gabriel, Shador Sanders.
And if you're Dylan Gabriel, I know he can't do this, and he's going to have to go in there. Now he's a 5'10" lefty, and he really played well at Oregon. He's played a lot of football, too, and he threw for a ton of yards in college. And he's probably by all accounts, sounds like he's a great kid. And maybe that's why you would draft a guy like this, because, you know, he came off really good in the meetings and was the opposite of Shador. And now here he is thinking, man, when he gets drafted, I'm going to go learn from Joe Flacco and Kenny Pickett, and maybe I'll have a chance to be the ultimate starter someday down the road. Now he's got to deal with this three-ring circus. I mean, I thought the Browns did the great thing with the trade with the Jaguars. I thought that was awesome. I gave them a lot of credit for doing that. And now I see this, and I'm like, what the hell are they doing again?
We'll see how the Shador Dylan Gabriel thing could end up being a really good thing for Dylan Gabriel, because, you know, we see all these guys with these chips on their shoulder. He was already had a chip on his shoulder being a smaller guy, you know, being a third round guy. Now it's like with Shador, I mean, he's got every opportunity to be everything that Shador isn't. And the same thing with Shador, too. Like, now he's going to have come in and be like, all right, you know what? Everybody doubted me. I think it could be beneficial for the both of them. And then, you know, maybe they're both good. And then the Browns can trade one of them to go somewhere else, a quarterback needy team. I mean, these guys, all you want, and I understand what you're saying for Dylan Gabriel, because it's like his whole world definitely changed with that pick.
Oh, my God. He went from like, all right, I'm going to the Browns now. Who did they just take?
But it's like all you want is opportunity, right? That's all you're looking for is opportunity.
Yeah, but, you know, then, of course, you know, he doesn't really even – nobody even really talks about his draft going to Cleveland. All anybody's talking about is Shador going to Cleveland. And then he has to have a press conference. Oh, yeah, I'm ready to work. I'm ready to go. You know, I'm ready to be there. I'm ready to, it's going to be a great fit for me. And I'm like, okay. There's other guys in that room, too, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, like, he has no filter whatsoever.
It doesn't seem like it. And how about these Ole Miss kids who one of them ends up being Jeff Ulbrich's son, former Jets interim head coach and, of course, defensive coordinator. He's got a laptop open. His son sees the numbers of the draft picks, ends up giving it to his buddy. He's sitting in the room. They call Shador Sanders, pretend to be Mickey Loomis of the New Orleans Saints, and then told him they have to wait a little bit longer. It's caught on this live stream with Shador. You know, as much as Shador, I guess, needed to be humbled in this process and people didn't like some of the way that he acted and some of these videos came out, no one deserves that type of joke put on them in that situation. But Jeff Ulbrich's son did come out. He did apologize. He took responsibility for it. But as much as everybody was all over Shador and having fun with it, that was just, that was too much, man. That was.
But the amazing thing is that Shador had his live stream going and the whole thing. And that's why we all knew about it.
Yeah.
Because, again, Shador is highlighting himself.
Yeah.
So that's why we saw it. I don't like the fact that Ulbrich's son did this. And I can't, I'm thinking Jeff is like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
You know, and he really put his dad in a really weird, tough spot.
Listen, man.
Really tough.
Thank God he wasn't still with the Jets, because that's such a Jets thing, isn't it?
Yes.
Right? That the Jets would have to deal with something like that?
I think it sucks that the kid did it, and I hate the fact that Shador, you know, had to go through that. But again, like, we would have never known about it had Shador not been live streaming on social media.
That's a good point.
And this is why teams don't want him or didn't want him. Or owners said, told their general managers, get him the hell off the board. I don't want him.
Yeah.
Like, you can't expect to be, like, totally entitled the way he has been entitled as at least the last 4 years. I don't know about the high school years and all that other stuff, but at Jackson State and at Colorado, he has been entitled. His father put him front and center, and that's fine. I love my kids, too, and I want to do everything I can to help them. But, you know, his father retired his number after 2 years and a losing record.
Yeah, but
I mean that screams entitlement.
Of course, but let's not forget, and maybe it wasn't to this level, but you know, there was a lot of Caleb Williams stuff that was happening about how much money he was making and all the, you know, the painting of the nails, and he's crying in the stands, and you know, he's a big nil athlete. He tells the punter, "We're not going to need you to punt because you know, we're going to be scoring touchdowns all the time." All of these things.
But he has real ability.
Well, right, but this is what I'm getting to. There was that story about how he wanted equity in the team that drafted him, all this stuff.
Yes.
But he still went number one because teams thought he could play. So that's the point. I just don't want to be missed in this whole thing. There's nothing that you said I disagree with about Shador and his attitude and the entitlement and all that.
Yeah.
But the NFL owners, the GMs and the coaches won't care about that if they think that that guy can save their job, win a championship for them, solidify them in the annals of the organization that they're in. You know, if the guy can play, he can play. The league told everybody, we don't think this guy can play.
Well, that, and I'm just telling you, I know Caleb Williams had some of the same type of issues that Shador had, but this had to be internally with these meetings and around these teams and maybe some of the teams. Let's just say the Carolina Panthers, and I don't know if this to be true or not, but let's say the Carolina Panthers wanted to have a meeting with Shador. And Shador really doesn't want to go to the Carolina Panthers, and he goes to the meeting and he just turns off everybody in the room, including the GM, the owner, if the owner's there, the head coach. Everybody in the room is just like, this guy's crazy. There's no way we want any part of this. And that's part of the thing. You know, you got to sell yourself to the people that are interviewing you. It's like any job like you go to, and it's a job interview.
I think here's the question. If Shador Sanders handled himself perfectly in every one of those interviews and all the things that he's been criticized for off the field, he did the exact opposite, where would he have been drafted?
I think a lot higher.
Well, what's a lot higher? Third round?
I think that if he would have presented himself the way that most, and I even think Caleb Williams had good meetings last year. he was good at the combine. I mean, he was good in terms of meeting with people.
But not you don't think Shador would have drafted in the first round?
No, I don't think. I didn't think that when this whole process started. And that had nothing to do with what we have found out since. Mm. That only had to do with what I was watching on film. Because I saw a guy, you know, I saw a guy that was extending plays a lot, which is good. But, you know, it was, I don't know.
Second round, maybe?
Yeah. I mean, I could see that as long as the attitude was the attitude that I felt like I could deal with.
Sure.
And that he was going to have a positive effect on my team, that he wasn't going to be a negative. And he found out that, you know, building your own draft room, legendary, always on social media, hyping everything, showing the watch to the fans. I mean, you know, shoving a referee in the back, not shaking the hand of the Colorado State quarterback after Colorado State loses to them. I mean, all of this stuff is taken in by all of these front office, you know, because they're trying to do as much background as they possibly can on every single one of these kids. And if it's a quarterback, you really want to make sure that you know who this person is.
Well, he's got an opportunity now to change all of that, and we'll see what he does. Is he going to be, you know, next year or the next 2 years on the Colorado sideline with his dad, or is he going to be in the NFL making a name for himself?
Do you think, I'm telling you, the Cleveland media is going to be all over this. You know, everybody's going to be all over this, and he's the fifth round pick. And in the middle of all this is Joe Flacco, Kenny Pickett, and Dylan Gabriel. I mean, what a just a disaster.
He might get cut.
It is a disaster.
If he comes in there and does not do the things that you would expect from a guy who was humbled by this process, they'll cut him. I mean, he's a fifth-round pick, you know?
Yeah.
They'll cut him.
But that there'll never be a fifth-round pick more scrutinized than this one.
Yeah. When was Michael Sam taken?
Because that was the seventh round.
That was the seventh round, so yeah.
He was the gay player that the Rams took.
Right, but that's what I was trying to say. You know, fifth round pick, seventh round pick, whatever it was, that was one that people had talked about, you know, a late round pick. But you're right. I mean, this is
only about this kid's personality and the way that he carried himself. That's what this is about.
And the fact they don't think he could play.
Well, I mean, they do think he could play or they wouldn't have drafted him, but The fact is that he did not impress anybody. And then, of course, like even Deion was on different podcasts talking about how, you know, he wants to protect his kid. I'm like, well, you just protected him for 4 years. Sooner or later, he's got to grow up and do it on his own.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. Looks like a beautiful morning out there. We've got Jerry Recco in here to tell us about the Knicks, the draft, the Mets and Yankees. What's up, Jerry?
We are brought to you by Mercedes-Benz of Morristown. I'll do the Knicks, then I'll do the I finally got to some of this NFL sound, which we'll get to after that, and then we'll get to the baseball. So this was Karl-Anthony Towns and Jalen Brunson really came to play yesterday, as they have the entire series for the most part. And I know Towns had that bad fourth quarter and second half, but making big shot after big shot down the stretch as the Knicks take a 3-1 series lead.
Up top for Towns, 5 to shoot, right side drive on Durin, takes a dribble, spins, fade away, got it! Towns with an impossible shot!
Kidding me?
Falling out of bounds on the right side, it's a 2-point game again.
I think that's Knicks radio with the call. That's how it's labeled, but I'm not 100% sure. So we'll leave it there. And that was a hell of a shot. He also had the go-ahead three. Knicks win 94-93, holding off Detroit in the final seconds on that whole controversial ending. But a win is a win. Here was Tom Thibodeau. My guys really fought. They were down 11 with 8 minutes to go in this game, came all the way back.
We didn't have much going our way to start the fourth and dug down and found a way to win in the end. A lot of tough plays, Cat hitting the big shots, Jalen big shots, McHale's defense, OG's defense, Josh's hustle plays, the rebounds. We needed everybody and just find a way to win. And that's the bottom line.
And that's what they did. Once again, up 3-1. Here was Brunson. So he's at the podium with Towns after the game. And they were talking about defending Cade Cunningham. And then it got to the defense they played down the stretch.
I think we were just connected in the last minute of the game. We were able to get stops and a little bit of prayers here and there, but
it is Sunday.
Yeah. That Those Towns just kind of chiming in and then kind of laughing under his breath. Mikal Bridges says we earned this victory.
Just grit. There's a lot of grit. You know, a lot of things weren't going our way. Shots weren't falling. Just find a way to win. That's the most important thing.
And Bridges wasn't great, but hit a couple of big threes in this game. Officials did say after the game they missed the call on Hart at the buzzer on Tim Hardaway Jr., but again, in a physical game like that,
so
you're
the
not
officials agreed that they missed the call.
Yeah.
All right.
They did.
That's something.
Now, but what I don't know is, do they talk about all the calls they missed the entire game?
No.
Right. I didn't think so. Game 5 Tuesday night, tomorrow night, at Madison Square Garden. Knicks can close it out on their home floor. It is funny when you look at the replay, too. If you watch the game, out of all the plays where there was contact.
Yeah, this is the least amount of it.
It's just not much. But there, it is what it is. So
not much.
No, compared to
the game. I'll give you one, and there are a few people that put it out on social media, too. On that play, I mean, Josh Hart gets pushed so that they can kick the ball to the corner. I mean, how is that not a foul on Detroit? And that's just, you know, part of it. Yeah, see, that it's before that, but still, you get it. T-Wolves, Lakers. So, Lakers trying to draw even with Minnesota. They're down 3. I will give you the final sequence in this game as well.
Was that Bridges on the
ground? Yeah,
laying there.
Mm-hmm.
He's laying there watching the whole thing.
Yep.
Lakers don't have a timeout. 10.7 seconds left to play. Lakers are down by 3. Luka pressured. Now gets across midcourt with 5. With 4 to LeBron in the corner. Reeves. He'll launch the corner 3. It's in and out. No good. Jaden McDaniels. The ball game is over. The Wolves have taken game 4.
There they have. And a 3-1 series lead. Minnesota radio with that call. 116-113 was the final. Anthony Edwards was the star. He scored 43 as Minnesota outscored LA 32-19 in the fourth. Here was Edwards. Pretty honest afterwards. We know how to break the Lakers down defensively if you're going to throw a bunch of guys at me.
If we space like this and somebody cuts, it's going to be wide open because they're low man. They basically putting 3 people on me. Like, once I drive, they try to trap me. If I get around a trap, it's the third guy coming up as a low man. So if you just equal out and the dude, it's 3 people on the left side, on the opposite weak side.
He gets it. So, and he had 43.
What?
They're throwing 3 guys at him. Here was LeBron. We blew it.
I mean, we had some really good looks. Luka missed a point-blank layup, you know, to put us up 7. You know, I missed a point-blank layup to put us up 4.
And so they had opportunities, couldn't come away with it, and now they find themselves down 3-1. The Celtics are up 3-1 on the Magic, winning 107-98. Jason Tatum, 37 points, 14 rebounds. Big game for Jaylen Brown as well. And the Pacers hammered the Bucks, 129-103. They're up 3-1. And worse for Milwaukee, the injury to Damian Lillard. Here was Doc Rivers.
They're going to do an image tomorrow. Obviously, his lower leg. And just being honest, it's not very promising.
No. Believe it's an Achilles. And don't know if we will see him again. But that looked terrible.
Yeah.
As he kind of went down. Pretty quickly. And Indiana in this game, 60% from the field. Hard to lose when you shoot it that way. And then the Bucks lose Lillard. All right, let's get to some of the football clips from the weekend. First with the Giants. So I feel like this all started with the Micah Parsons podcast with Abdul Carter after he was drafted. He mentioned the 56. I know Lawrence Taylor has since said, yeah, not happening. But before, I think LT chimed in. This was Carter with the media. I think this was Friday afternoon or Friday night with the New York media.
We're still in the process of that, but we'll see what happens.
Which one would you prefer?
Yeah. We'll see what happens.
I think what's going to happen is a different number. I don't think it's going to be 11 or 50.
No.
He's going to have to pick a different number.
I'm just telling you, man, the teams have got to protect those numbers. I said this on Friday. Now, everybody is saying that Warren Moon gave the number 1 to Cam Ward when he was drafted. Well, that's because he was not only the first overall pick, but everybody got him number 1 for the teams that they were picked by. That was their jersey. Mm-hmm. So Abdul Carter was handed a number 1 jersey when he was drafted. So the thing is, technically, Warren Moon wore the Houston Oilers jersey, not the Tennessee Titans jersey.
Yeah.
So if Cam Ward does end up with number 1, it's a completely different franchise.
That's right. So it's not really unretiring a Titans number 1.
Right.
It's different.
Exactly.
Here was Jackson Dart, the new Giants quarterback, already hearing from one Eli Manning.
He was actually one of the first people to reach out to me yesterday when the news broke. And I just think that I've had such a great connection with him and the Manning family that, you know, being able to have them in my corner has been a huge asset. And you know, I couldn't be more blessed to have them in my corner coming here and continuing that in the future.
Mm, okay.
Yeah, cool. Do you think that he was aware of your rant?
I don't know, man. It seemed like maybe Brian Daboll was when he showed up at the facility. Daboll was like touching him around his belly. I don't know if you saw that. He's like, I don't know, man. I didn't know about this. If Phil Simms says he's pudgy, then maybe I got to check this out. I'm not kidding either. He really was. He was on the field. He was patting him around the midsection there.
Then there's this Cam Scatabo, who the Giants drafted, this bruising running back, fired up to be with the Giants.
Super excited, man. I had a great visit with them, and, you know, I'm glad I can be a part of this organization and be ready to, you know, take whatever's on storm and get going. So
I think he was a little emotional too.
Oh, he was. Yeah, totally in tears around his family. I think it was his dad that was next to him, was tearing up too. I mean, that's a big one right there.
Yep. And then you guys talked about the prank call from Jeff Ulrich's son. So here is the call that is online. And so I guess it was from a live stream. I get that. But clearly, Ulbrich's son had to post him doing the phone call, too. So that's another part of
this.
Yeah,
it was Ulbrich's son was in the background of this. It was not him that made the call, but mm-hmm. It was him that got the number. Yes.
So here is the prank call.
This is Mickey Loomis here, GM of the Saints.
How you doing?
Good. How are you, man?
Good. Been waiting on you.
Yeah, we have. It's been a long wait, man. We're going to take you with our next pick right here, man.
This man doesn't do nothing to him.
Yeah. Hey, but you're going to have to wait a little bit longer, man. Sorry about that.
And then you kind of hear them laughing, and then here was on the other side, hey. Shador, as they hang up.
What does that mean?
What? What do you say?
I don't know. How
are you going to ask us what it means, and you was on the phone?
You heard that?
He said you're going to have to wait a little bit longer. Okay. Sorry about that.
Why would he call?
What the
f***? Hey, that's I don't know what that was. It's 50-50.
But nobody got this number, though.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing that Shador basically lives his life on Instagram or whatever the hell that is.
Well, he did. I mean, they filmed all of this. Yeah, I don't know if he's living his entire life. I don't know if he's on a live stream
I don't follow him, but he, you know, I think there's a lot of social media content that he puts out there. One of the reasons why, you know, he makes so much money with his name, image, and likeness because he is so popular on social media and a lot of people follow him.
Yeah, I mean, that's something I would have done at that age, what these kids did. But now, like all these years later, I'm like, oh, man, that's rough. That's terrible.
Especially when your dad's a coach in the NFL.
Yeah, that's even worse because then it makes your dad look bad.
Another dumbass move.
But I definitely would have done that.
How do you think Jeff Ulbrich feels?
Not good.
Oh, yeah, like a dummy.
No, he doesn't feel like a dummy. He's like, my kid is a jackass.
He also feels like a dummy because he left that open on his iPad. Like, can't be doing that, man.
Yeah, but, I can't even imagine that discussion between father and son. Like, what are you doing?
He's 21. It's not like he's 15 or
I know,
16.
But still, I mean, he compromised his dad. He took the number off of his dad's iPad.
Talk about entitled.
Dad didn't know anything. Right, exactly. Dad didn't know anything about it. And supposedly Shador had changed his number, his cell phone number, before the draft. And then the NFL got the new number because he was not at the draft. And thank God he was not at the draft. And sent that number around. So everybody had the number in the NFL. And that's where Jeff's son found it. Like, Jesus. No. I can't. The kid's name is Jax. Jax Ulbrich.
Jax Ulbrich.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, doesn't seem like the Ulbrichs have washed the Jets off them quite yet. They got a couple more months to get it completely off of them.
Now there were some that were stunned the way Shador fell, including one Mel Kiper on ESPN who was livid. I shouldn't say livid, but incredulous to how the NFL has drafted quarterbacks in past years.
What does that mean?
Oh, come on.
What do you say?
Yeah, what does that mean, Jerry?
Where the hell did it go? Oh, man, you stink. I got to get this for you. I'm going to play Jalen Milroe first, and I'm going to come back to that because there's a reason why I do want to play this for you. Here's Milroe with the media in on a conference call in Seattle.
Jalen, do you think you're the best quarterback in the draft, and do you have any message for the teams that passed on you today?
No pass.
Belt to ass is
belt
what he said.
Belt to ass.
Yeah.
Well, he's gonna whoop these teams that passed on him with a belt to their ass.
Apparently so.
All right.
Apparently so.
I like that. All right, my guy, Jalen Milroe.
Here's Mel Kiper.
Boomer Esiason was not happy when he was the second round pick.
Tom Brady was not happy.
They dropped. How'd they turn out?
And nobody's arguing that can happen.
The NFL has been clueless for 50 years when it comes to evaluating quarterback. Clueless.
All that.
No idea what they're doing in terms of evaluating quarterback. That's proof. There's proof of that.
Hmm. So there you go. Talking about guys that have slipped that should not have slipped.
Yeah, it's a little every year I hear the same thing. So
your name was all over the place this weekend.
I appreciate Mel, and I appreciate his support for me back in 1984 because that's when it really started, and that's when he really became the thing that he is now, the draft person that he is. So, I appreciate that. But, man, it's like every year it's the same thing.
I hear you.
Because every year somebody's going to fall for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's your own personality traits that piss somebody off. Sometimes they don't think that you can play. Sometimes they wonder if you're a really good teammate. I mean, there's all sorts of things that goes into this. And then if there's anything off the field that we don't know, but that they find out, and then we may not find out ever, or we might find out like, 6 weeks from now.
Yeah, understood.
This is a post from my buddy Andrew Filippone, who does a talk show out in Pittsburgh. It says, Mel Kiper Jr., for 50 years, the NFL's had no idea how to evaluate quarterbacks. Bro, you rank some guy named Forrest Lamp ahead of Patrick Mahomes. Pipe down.
Well, I mean, the fact is that Mel Kiper sits there every year and basically pumps guys up all the time. And sometimes those guys never turn out in the NFL.
But he's also, he's been talking about Shador as his number one overall player, and it's embarrassing for him to see the NFL smack him down to the fifth round because he looks like a doofus.
Yeah, I don't know if Mel Kiper has actually sat down with Shador. I have no idea. But if he would have put together a number of things that Shador had done leading up to this draft, he would have to say, I now understand why he's dropped. It's more personality driven than anything else.
Like Jalen Milroe said about it, the teams that passed on him, belt to ass, ESPN had lips to ass on the Sanders the entire weekend.
Yankees swept a doubleheader.
I will say, when we came back in Friday morning, that it was embarrassing that ESPN opened with Shador Sanders when Cam Ward was going to be the first pick. They spent 3 minutes talking about Shador Sanders as they opened their coverage. And we all knew that Tennessee was taking Cam Ward. That's who you should have been talking about.
Sure. Absolutely. Blew it.
Yankees won the first game 11-2. Then in the second game, they win 5-1. The Thrivewell player of the game, brought to you by Thrivewell Infusion, won J.C. Ascara.
1-1.
Long drive, right center field, off the bat of Ascara. Hey now, there it goes, way up in the bleachers. Home run for J.C. Ascara, his first big league homer.
And that's pretty cool, and that's why he's our Yankees Thriving Player of the Game, brought to you by Thrivewell, New York's premier infusion and injection center, saving lives drip by drip. Visit ThrivewellInfusion.com. Aaron Judge also homered in that game as they won 5-1. They split the two. The Yankees moved to 17-11. After they were rained out on Saturday, but they get the two games in yesterday. The Mets blew a 7-1 lead in the seventh and wound up losing to the Nationals by the score of 8-7. Fourth game of the series will be this afternoon, 4:05 on 880 Mets Odyssey Radio. Griffin Canning will make the start there, and the Devils find themselves down in a 3-1 hole now after losing to the Hurricanes 5-2 on Sunday. Game 5 Tuesday night in Raleigh.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. As we celebrate a Knicks win this morning, we also hear the news yesterday. Unfortunately, the passing of Knicks legend, two-time champion with the New York Knicks, Dick Barnett, who passed away yesterday at the age of 88. And I know young Boomer Esiason, Dick Barnett was one of those guys that you were watching winning a ton of games with those great teams in the late 70s.
Yeah, he was right in my wheelhouse, man. Like Rod Gilbert was, Walt Frazier, of course, and he was his running mate in the backcourt. And yeah, he died at 88. He is a Hall of Famer, won two championships with the Knicks, was a big part. And I had to go back and read this today just to remember, because I remember the Willis Reed game that's well chronicled and well written about, and all of us Knicks fans remember Willis Reed coming out of the locker room. And Marv Albert, saying, here comes Willis Reed. And, he played his first couple minutes. I think he hit his first two shots that game. And then that went on to be Clyde's greatest game. Like, he had a triple-double that game, and they won 113-99 in that decisive Game 7. And Dick Barnett played a very important role in that game. I think he had, like, 21 or 22 points, and he was the guy that was responsible for guarding Jerry West. And so, yeah, and he had the really unique shooting style where he would lift both of his legs up in the air. It looked so uncomfortable. And then, of course, he you know, he played basketball at Texas A&I and Tennessee A&I, I think it is. Tennessee A&I, I think. But anyway, nonetheless, yeah, I'm glad the Knicks won yesterday, you know, and because when you hear about Dick Barnett, I did a Sportsman and on him. You know, he was just as impactful on those teams as Willis was and as Walt Frazier was, Dick and Dave DeBuscher and Bill Bradley and Mike, I think it was Mike Reardon and those guys. They were right in my childhood wheelhouse.
Yeah, and we're still waiting for another one of those championships. Those guys get more and more legendary as the years go on.
I always wondered, like, because I didn't play for a franchise that had a championship. So the Bengals, the Jets had one in 69, but it seems so long ago, yeah. Right? You always wonder about, like, the 72 Dolphins, the undefeated Dolphins, how they always celebrate when the last undefeated team of the season ends up losing.
Yeah.
I always wonder if those ex-Knicks, like the Walt Frazier's of the world, just don't want them to win.
No, you know? No.
I think Walt wants them to win, but...
Of course he does.
I mean, those names are in the rafters, man, you know?
Yeah. No, but they definitely want to see him win. Because you look at the ex-players, even though we're talking about guys in more recent memory... They're at every one of these games, like Starks and Latrell Sprewell and Larry Johnson and
Patrick Ewing,
of course. Yeah, so they're into it, man. Marbury's going to games still, so no, they definitely want to see him do well. Mark is in Yorktown now on the Fan. What's going on, Mark?
Hey, good morning, boys. What's up?
What's up, Mark? What do you got for us?
Listen, I want to make a connection with Shedeur Sanders. So let's think about, what does this remind you of? That we kind of went through some off the field issues. And that one guy is Johnny Manziel. But the difference is here is that Johnny's team that he put in place during the draft process cleaned him up, right? Anything on socials was him working out, right? His draft team told him, you know, go into those interviews and you're going to look good, right? And then guess who they fooled again? The Cleveland Browns. There's only one team you can count on to be worse than the Jets and the Giants, and that's the Cleveland Browns.
Yep, that's right, Mark. I mean, so many quarterbacks, yeah. So many busts. But, yeah, I mean, there was so many rumors about Johnny Manziel and the story about how he had shown up hungover, smelling alcohol at the Manning QB camp and all these things that were going on. But, you know, during that pre-draft process, you know, whoever was around him did a nice job of packaging him up a little bit more.
He also made the phone call to the Cleveland Browns. Let's wreck the league together.
Yeah, well, they...
And they ended up... He ended up convincing whoever the assistant coach is, I forget who it was, convincing him to go convince the general manager to draft him. You know, and then you see that, you know, the documentary on Johnny Manziel after the fact, and, you know, he basically cops to being basically a jackass.
Oh, yeah. Yep, that was out of control, drinking too much, partying too much, didn't care about football. Yeah.
I mean, I told you, and Jay Glazer had it, and he wrote that there are those three cylinders that teams always look at, the injury, the character, and then does he really truly love football? And that's the Peyton Manning, you know, part of it, I think. But Shedeur, I think, just totally torpedoed himself. And for some reason, somebody didn't tell him, like, this is the way you got to do it. This is the way you got to try to be. And I just think the entitlement aspect of all of it just turns so many people off. That's the only way you can look at it.
I also think when you watch Johnny Manziel in college and you watch Shedeur Sanders in college, I mean, Johnny Manziel was one of the more exciting players of his era. I mean, I know
it was like Doug Flutie running all over the place.
I mean,
place.
It was shorter than most.
Yes.
And I understand his size wasn't what you wanted, prototype, but I mean, you'd watch those highlights and be, oh my God, you know, this is unbelievable what this kid can do. And with Shedeur, it's like, I mean, you don't really feel that way.
I know one thing, Johnny Manziel really had a hard time adjusting to two things when it came to the NFL. One was working really hard and knowing your offense and getting yourself immersed into all of it and putting everything else to the side. And number two was just, you know, he could not handle the speed of the NFL. Just the size and the speed of the NFL, he couldn't handle. So you can say whatever you want about Shador Colorado, and you know, he didn't have an offensive line, or this guy screwed this one up. And by the way, there were times where he did throw his teammates under the bus. Or, you know, when you see him working out with Cam Ward, you know, and Cam Ward, you know, and he and Cam Ward going back and forth, and you know, Shador going, ah, you ran with the ball, you had to run with the ball, I didn't have to run with the ball, but then you had a better offensive line and running game than I did. I mean, you see all that stuff out there, you are like, wait a minute, time out. This guy is not coming to my team. All right. Of course, the Browns. only the Browns. I thought they had such a good draft, and then all of a sudden this happens.
Well, I mean, hell, it could work out. It could. I mean, I'm not saying that it's gonna, but maybe Shador Sanders, this is what he needed. Just like the Knicks need to get smacked around by the Pistons a little bit to wake up. Maybe this is exactly what Shador Sanders needed to get on the right track. I still don't think he's a very good player, but if something's going to turn that attitude around, it certainly was what happened to him in this draft.